Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Doing great. Very, very excited about the program tonight. We've got a great one lined up for everybody.
We've got a huge show tonight. I was actually saying right when you and I started chatting this evening that we've got a bunch of big shows lined up, but certainly none bigger than the one we have tonight. And it comes on the heels of our brief summer hiatus. We took 3 weeks off, and it looks like we were not missed. I don't know, because we were running these archive shows in the meantime, and people were lapping them up. There was a great response to our shows from 2008. I don't know if I'm going to tell Michael Darling this or not, but he was on all of them. It was back when he used to join us every week, and the ratings were through the roof. So I don't know if there's just a bunch of Michael Darling fans out there that we didn't know about. We might have to tap back into that market. But it's great to
keep it down about Michael. He'll want us to double his pay, and oh well.
I would gladly double his pay. Actually, I have no problem with it. He can get 10 times as much as what we paid him back in those days. But it's wonderful to be back. Like I said, we've got a bunch of big shows going on. Anything major that you had happen, Stephen? I noticed that I didn't get the 500 word essay, what I did on my hiatus that I was expecting by 3 p.m. today. So, it's going to be late if I get it tomorrow morning. That's the difference between an A- and a B+ right there, But anything interesting to report that's happened in the last 3 weeks?
We just had a great time on our vacation, Phil, and it was just a fun time. And I hope you had a good time on your break, too. Or was it a business trip? I didn't hear.
I had some vacation in there, had some business conflicts, but also just we needed some time to kind of recharge our batteries and get the show back to where we wanted it to be, and here we are, and it's great to be back. And I think without any further ado, let's bring out our guest this evening, and let's get talking a little bit about H+, the digital series, an exciting new series that's going to be premiering on YouTube next week. Premieres 1 week from tonight on YouTube. We've provided the link at The Speculist and over on the Blog Talk Radio site, and we've got some folks from that show who are going to be talking with us. Stephen, are we doing two intros or three intros right now?
I think we may be doing three intros. Jason, are you on the line with us? Was that Jason Taylor that just called in? Well, we may be doing two intros.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead? I'd like to welcome Stuart Hendler. Stuart is a theatrical film director. He has recently helmed two hotly anticipated projects in the world of digital entertainment, both of which launched this year. One of those is H+, the digital series, which, of course, we'll be talking about tonight. And the other is Halo 4, Forward Unto Dawn, which is a live-action digital series based on the Xbox game of the same name. The series debuts on Machinima Prime and Halo Waypoint on October 5th. Previously, Stuart directed the feature film Sorority Row and Whisper, and this is pretty interesting. His directorial debut was a short film, One, that played at the 2003 Sundance Film Festival, where it won the Online Audience Award. Stuart, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Well, it's fantastic to have you with us. And, Stephen, could you introduce our next guest, please?
Phil, you are breaking up. You might want to check your audio quality there. We also have with us tonight John Cabrera. He is an actor, writer, and producer. His many film and TV appearances include the role of Brian Fuller on Gilmore Girls. He has made a number of short films and not long ago wrote and directed a teen musical. He is a co-creator of H+, the digital series, and one of the writers for that show as well. So welcome, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, it's great that I've thought about doing a Venn diagram to show this leading up to this, but great that we finally hit that critical nexus of Fast Forward Radio listeners and Gilmore Girl fans.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like,
you know, we got some red meat to feed that group. You know, they've been clamoring for something, and now we got John here for him. So
I'm sure that there are a few Gilmore fans that are listening to the show.
I don't doubt it. Everybody who's a Gilmore Girls fan, chime in the chat room, please. We want to hear from you. Okay. Great having you with us, gentlemen. It's a real pleasure talking with you again. I had the privilege of being on a panel with these two gentlemen at Comic-Con in 2011, last year's Comic-Con, and it was great fun spending time with these guys at Comic-Con and talking about H+, the digital series. So I guess my first question, before we get into
Phil, and I hate to interrupt, Phil, but we may have Jason Taylor. Are you on the line? I guess. Okay.
Jason, keep trying. It's okay. Keep trying.
All right,
Jason.
Go ahead, Phil.
It's okay. My first question is going to be, the show was announced at Comic-Con in 2011, and then it's been announced again at 2012, and now the show is actually getting ready to premiere. What happened in that year in between? Why was there a year lag? I was, maybe my expectations were wrong, but I was expecting to see the show online sooner than it happened. What went on there?
Stuart, that's you, man. That's all you.
Really? You're going to toss that to me?
That's your question, Stuart.
Awesome.
Yeah, I meant to say, Stuart, what happened there?
Well, it took a second to sort of figure out what the best way to get this thing out. It's uncharted territory for Warner Brothers. So while we were editing and finishing the project, they were sort of sussing out how they wanted to distribute it and what partners they wanted to involve. And all of that sort of snapped into place in the spring, and then it was about picking the right sort of window to come out in and not not be competing against TV and kind of find a place where we were likely to get some viewers. So that's where they landed on the business side, and they sort of do their decision-making process the way they want to, and we just make things look as awesome as we can over here on the creative side.
Yeah, and to speak to that point as well, I mean, since we had announced at Comic-Con up through earlier this year, we were still doing work on the series. We were still, the series is big. I mean, it's very big, and it's not just a series as in a bunch of pieces of video online. I mean, this is a big world that we're creating, both on the YouTube channel as well as off the YouTube channel. And we just wanted to make sure that we did it right, you know, not just from the distribution side, but from the creative side as well. We wanted to make sure that that the world, what we had sort of created, what Stuart had delivered, that we could create a world around that and a strategy that sort of supported it. So we just didn't really want to rush that,
And the trailer was finished sort of well in advance of the entire series being finished. So that was a rush to get that done for Comic-Con last year, and we were still in the thick of the edit process.
Of course, yeah. Although I believe there were a few episodes existing at that time because John, as I recall, I watched a few on your iPhone at a bar at Comic-Con. Maybe I'm not supposed to tell that story. Might not have been your phone.
It wasn't my phone, but
there's plausible deniability.
I believe that somebody showed you episodes last year, or not episodes, but I think that it might have
probably
been like a rough cut.
Yeah, a rough cut
of stuff of one or two things that were shown in anticipation of you being on the panel.
It was probably a completely different show. That's the thing. My memory isn't what it used to be. So I think there's deniability all the way around. I won't name names, but people were drinking
back
at that event.
What happened at Comic-Con?
It's all fuzzy looking back. I couldn't say. So because we're going to get much deeper into it here in a few minutes, but just to kind of set the stage for those listening who aren't familiar, what's the basic thrust of the show? 25 words or less. I'll give that one to you, John. What's H plus?
25 words.
Yeah, never give John a 25 words or less.
Well, that's bad news, man. That's bad news. I'll implode. All right. Well, let me see. This is not going to be 25.
He's going to take 25 words winding up to it. Okay, Stuart, give us the quick. What's the show about?
No, it's all John.
I'm going to be counting your words. I'm going to be counting your words here, dude.
All right. So, in a future where people's personal technology has moved into their nervous system, a cataclysmic event wipes out a third of the world's population, and we strive to understand who was responsible, what led up to it, and what the ramifications were. I think that was like 50 words.
Yeah, that was way more than 25.
That was a bit more than 25. That is
basically it. I mean, it's a story about a near future world connected by nanocomputers. Something goes wrong. We try and figure it out.
Something terrible goes wrong, and we'll get into that a bit. Now, I've mentioned when the show premieres. Let's talk a little bit about this. This is interesting. It's going to be available on YouTube beginning next week, and let's talk a little bit about how the show is packaged, because the Stephen and I had the privilege of watching the first 12 episodes, and awesome stuff, by the way, just gripping, riveting TV. It's some of the best stuff you'll ever see. But one thing that's interesting about it is, I guess per the kind of webisode medium, they're quite short. We're dealing in the kind of brief movies, right? Quick. You're not going to watch an hour of this a week, right? This is something you'll get a few small doses of a week. So how many doses and how long will they be? That, I guess, is the question I'm trying to formulate here.
Well, you know, first of all, we try to stay away from the word webisode when we talk about these things.
Okay.
I realize that's sort of a word that has become synonymous for this type of content, but I think that the big difference between this series and a traditional web series is that the series itself was designed to be many different things, right? Like from a package sort of standpoint, right? Like audiences who come in later into the series, when we've already released enough of these episodes online, can actually watch this in a variety of ways. And some of the ways that they can watch them will actually mimic TV in length, because people will be able to actually rearrange these episodes and watch them in various orders, in groupings, and whatnot, because the series was written out of order. So we like to sort of think of these less as webisodes or even episodes and more as parts, pieces, puzzle pieces to a larger story. To answer the question about what we are going to be releasing, every week we're going to be releasing at least two of these pieces, two of these episodes, parts. Early on in the series, the first 2 weeks, we're going to be actually giving a lot more than two. In fact, if users subscribe to the channel, people who are actually subscribers of our channel are going to get extra. They're going to get extra benefits from being a subscriber, and that's to say they'll have earlier access to stuff. They'll have direct line of communication with us and whatnot, and that will also be sort of a part of our distribution strategy.
Very cool. Very very interesting, innovative. And one of the things that is interesting about it is that the episodes are not all uniform in length, is that right? They seem to be, some are longer, some are shorter, or am I creating that in my head? They're actually all the same length.
No, that's correct. They range from 2 to 8 minutes and sort of all tend to average in the 5 range.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it seems like some, they all feel like they're over before you know it, because it's like, oh, you're just this close to, and then the big, oh my God, not that, and then you're 7 years earlier or 3 years later or something, and it's just awesome because it really gets your attention. Now, this story could have been a lot of different things. It occurs to me this could have been presented in the format that you guys are doing, this really novel and innovative way of presenting a story, or it could have been a feature film, or it could have been a standard TV series. What do you think is the advantage, or you know, if you're particularly psyched about doing it this way, why would that be? Stuart, that's a question for you, I think.
Well, you know, I bounced the earliest seeds of that back to John, but this was built from the ground up to be a web series, in that it was something that we wanted people to sort of experience from multiple directions and be able to kind of repackage and repurpose and experience it different ways and find more meaning as they did that. It's a hyper complex story, and we felt like the best way to kind of let people attack it was by letting them sort of be the decider in how they wanted to approach the material. But in terms of how it was originally conceived and the TV feature web of it all, I'll throw that to John.
Yeah, I mean, we when Cosimo and I first conceived of the idea, and mind you, we sort of came up with this in 2006, right? So 6 years ago. This was before the iPhone was out. And we, at that time, it was just a kernel of an idea. We began researching, developing a story world. And then in 2007, we started actually sharing it with people. We started sharing this idea and taking it around. And at that point, we really didn't know what it was, to be honest with you. We were wondering maybe it was feature, maybe it was, you know, a TV show. And so we just started taking meetings with people and seeing what people thought. And the general reception to it was that people really thought it was a very exciting, very big world. And we finally sat down with Brian Singer and his guys at Bad Hat Harry. And the general sense from them was, first of all, they loved it, but they also felt like it was sort of meant to be told in this sort of vignette fashion that we had imagined. And we all just kind of thought, you know, that the best place to do something like that would be the web, that it would be the most, you know, forgiving of that kind of format, and not just forgiving, that people would actually get excited about that type of format. And so from then on, that was, you know, in beginning of 2008 or middle of 2008 when we really started kind of getting into the actual script development, it was a web series from then on. We never thought of it as anything other than that. And everything that we put into the writing, I think, came from the idea that it was a web project. I mean, you know that every episode begins with this, you know, story convention, cinematic convention that we use, where we put the audience into the eyes of one of the characters in that episode. So sometimes we don't know who it is, sometimes we kind of know who it is, and we use it to give some sort of perspective on the scene, add mystery, whatnot. But that convention probably wouldn't have come. We probably wouldn't have even thought of it if we had been thinking just in film or in TV. So in a lot of ways, the web has informed us, and it continues to inform us. You know, Stuart was just saying that, like, we, you know, this is a project that we sort of hope that people consume in many different ways. In fact, our hope is that people take the story pieces into their own hands and actually put together YouTube playlists that are made up of enough episodes that they do actually match the length of a feature film or do match the length of an episode of a television show. And they can certainly do it, because YouTube's playlist function is a pretty robust and very specific tool for doing that type of stuff.
So really what you're describing is a kind of a new sort of relationship between the viewer and the material, where the viewer gets to be almost kind of a co-creator of the experience that they're having.
Absolutely. I think that they should be, you know.
And Phil, just to let you know, Jason Taylor says he's in the queue, so if you guys can get him on, that would be awesome.
Steven, we see a number there in the queue. It's
okay,
great, because I've got a question for Jason that just popped up in the chat room.
Hello.
Is this Jason?
It is.
Okay, great. Welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
That's a fascinating system with technology going wrong being the subject of our wonderful little web venture. That was fascinating.
So sorry to leave you hanging in the queue there, Jason. This is Phil.
No, it's totally my fault. Pleasure, Phil.
Steven's on too. Well, actually, it's an interesting thing. We've been doing this program on Blog Talk Radio for we're going on our fifth, at least 5 years in October. Is that right, Steven?
That's right. Are you listening to this?
And the Blog Talk Radio software has been in beta the entire time. So it's just, you know, that's the.
They're talking about shit like.
What's going on?
Hello?
What was that?
I don't have any idea. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jason. Jason Taylor is a production executive with Bad Hat Harry, Brian Singer's production company, where he has worked on such projects as Valkyrie, X-Men First Class, and Superman Returns. In addition to his role with H+, Jason is an associate producer for the upcoming film Jack the Giant Killer. All right.
Hi.
Welcome, Jason.
Pleasure to meet y'all.
All right.
Jason, so sorry to leave you waiting in the queue. I got a question just for you, okay? One of the chatters wants to know, is there a relationship between H+, the digital series, and H+, the magazine? I thought you might want to field that one.
Well, I think that, you know, H+, as it stands, you know, it's basically an international symbol for transhumanism. There's no relation other than the idea and spirit that embodies. You know, this was completely a series that takes those ideals and principles and really roots them in characters that all audiences will want to follow. So, you know, no, it has no relation to the magazine other than, you know, its spirits and principles on the H+ transhumanism icon.
There you go. It's a generic term. I think if PJ Manning were with us, who's one of the proponents of changing the name of the World Transhumanist Society to Humanity Plus and pushing the H+ idea, it was exactly, I think, in the hopes that the term would catch on and that it would be used, you know, for the name of a magazine, for the name of a TV series. So I think it's great that vision is sort of being realized.
I remember when the first issue of H+ came out, because we were working on this at that time, and I remember thinking about how suddenly this idea was starting to gain momentum in pop culture, that we were going to actually, within, you know, who knows? I mean, at that time, I thought it could be within a few years that we start seeing it all over the place. And I have to say, I feel like it's kind of all over the place. I think that if you are a proponent of the transhumanist movement, you should be really excited right now.
Well, this, you know, that's kind of the spiel I give at the beginning of the show, actually. kind of what we're all about here, because absolutely this world seems to be unfolding all around us as we go. John, it was interesting that you noted earlier that you guys started working on this before the invention of the iPhone. We got people in the chat room saying, "Really? Was there a time before iPhones?" It's almost kind of hard to imagine. The technology gets so embedded in, and it's hard to have the hindsight to realize that. Even since last year, even since we were talking about these things last year, an awful lot has happened, and an awful lot continues to happen, kind of propelling us in the direction of the world that's described in the show. Although, let's hope, here's hoping, without necessarily the twist that makes the show so dramatic and so interesting. But before we get into some of that conceptual and philosophical stuff, I think it'd be a good idea. Let's talk a little bit about how it was made, because I think there's some really interesting stuff to be gleaned from that. Just talk a little bit about where you filmed it, over what period of time, how many people were involved, if you care to, what kind of budget you were working on. I'm just opening it up here. Tell us about how H+, the digital series, was made, and I'll start that one with Jason, since we left him hanging for so long.
Well, you know, I'll speak to, you know, production elements, you know, very, very briefly, in that, you know, in trying to recreate a world that, you know, we have episodes, obviously, that take place in places as far from as Mumbai to Japan to New York to San Francisco. we needed a location that would replicate all of those. And we settled on Santiago, Chile, and with the support of Warner Brothers, went down there and found that it was beyond our wildest hopes and dreams of what we could accomplish on the limited budget that we had. And we basically shot it as an independent film. You know, it was 29 days, sometimes moving two and three times a day, but all in the hopes of delivering, this great story to the screen.
Very cool. So you found
one. What I found compelling about this was that this is a sci-fi movie. It doesn't just happen in the United States. It's or even in one time period. And I guess that it creates a huge scope and a lot of possibility.
Completely. I mean, you know, even places like Finland and Italy and England, everything has a everyone around the world has an opportunity to really feel a part of this series, because it really is about, you know, how technology affects us as a whole. There's storylines that, John, I'd love to turn it over to you to speak about, you know, how you came up with the idea of integrating, what technology means to countries in Africa, and where all of that kind of led, and really was, you know, it was an international casting process. Everything about this show speaks to its international appeal and why YouTube's global audience was the perfect place for it to debut.
I was actually asked once, actually recently, I was asked, you know, why Cosimo and I decided to make the big corporation that is responsible for creating this technology an Irish company. And I sort of thought back to when we were first developing that back in 2006. And I remember Cosimo had actually been working in Dublin just prior to that, or around that time, and we really felt like it would be sort of disingenuous to paint a story, an international story, with something happening really on a global scale, and to sort of Americanize it with by kind of giving all of that sort of tech to America, when the truth is, you know, we're seeing, like, you know, the stuff that's happening at CERN and all that stuff is showing us that, no, that there is a lot of stuff happening outside of the United States, in some cases a lot more happening. And I think that was sort of the impetus for why we went in that direction. And I think that opened us up to really exploring how big technology in the world, you know, what the relationship is and how it fits into a story like this. I think that was sort of our where we kind of came from in that. And then we looked at Ireland at the time, and we looked at its biotech sector, and we just thought it was a really cool setting for something like that.
It is really cool, and it's interesting because, you know, Ireland has had this kind of on again off again tech center reputation. Right, so
yeah.
There have been these periods when there's been huge investment in technology, and companies have been headquartered there, or back in the early 90s, I was with a company in the U.S. which was a startup here, but it had a lot of its development done in Ireland. So I think there's a lot of credibility in making that kind of choice, and it goes to one of the things, one of the observations I would make about the show, having watched all of 12 episodes and eager to see more, is that the texture of that world you've created is so believable, and the characters are believable. Tell me you filmed it all in one country, that's fine, but I really have a sense of place in each of the places that I go, and you really immediately buy into who these people are, and what's driving them, and what's confusing them, and what's frightening them, and it makes it, I just think a real departure from so much material that we see that deals with this kind of stuff that's often just about the visuals and the, you know, making amazing looking things happen. Not to say that this doesn't look amazing, because it absolutely does, but the heart of the show, the heart of the story is something that is absolutely compelling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There, Stephen, I went all fanboy. What do we do now?
Well, I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to pick it up from there, Phil. That sort of leads into the question of, you know, so where'd the big idea come from? I mean, y'all been working on this a long time. What was the germ of the idea that got this thing going?
John
Cabrera.
Here we go. All right, so I've been telling this story a lot, but back in 2006, I was actually driving through a parking lot here in L.A. I was driving through the Kodak Theater parking lot, now the Dolby Theater, and I remember my radio started going off. And there was a really great song playing on the radio, so I didn't want it to end, and I just stopped my car. Of course, I backed up a ton of traffic. People are beeping at me, and finally I'm like, ugh, and I go back down into the lot. I lose the song. And at some point shortly after that, I just started thinking about how I was suddenly not connected to what was going on up there. And I thought, gosh, you know, something could happen. I wouldn't know. And then, of course, that went into, you know, what if something happened and me being down here actually saved me? And the disconnection of it. And somehow that sort of turned into the idea of implanted computers. And I took it back to Cosmo. I was like, what do you think of this idea? And he was like, I think it's really cool. Why don't we just start playing around with it? Let's look at all types of people throughout the world that would be affected by something like this, and let's just start coming up with stories. And we came up with dozens of stories, many of which we threw away. But little by little, we started to develop this story world, and we started to see how the characters that we were developing had these sometimes direct, sometimes indirect connections to one another. And then, you know, eventually that sort of turned into this story world. And all the while, we're, of course, doing research on all of this technology and seeing, like, oh wow, this is real. This is actually happening. You know, we're actually seeing these types of innovations. You know, at that time, only a couple of years earlier, we had had this experiment with the paralyzed man who had been implanted with the device to move the mouse cursor with his thoughts. So it was really exciting. And I think it was at that point that he and I sort of became really fixated on the transhumanist movement and getting really excited about it.
Okay. So this story, it gives us I don't think I'm spoiling too much if I say a pretty bleak, if not dystopian, vision of the future. Was it always your intention to do a story like that? Or actually, let me ask the question this way. Doesn't it almost have to be? Because if you do a show about how awesome the future is, you really don't have much of a story to tell. Is that fair to say?
I would actually, just before John jumps in, like to say, I don't think of it as bleak. I think of it, you know, truly as hopeful as the power of the human spirit, and what, you know, what you have, the obstacles we have to overcome. Sure, you know, there are tragedies, and there have been tragedies throughout life, and this is just a technological tragedy, but you know, I think that it really speaks more to the power of us to continue and go on in the face of adversity and rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always bring up
this. Fair enough.
Lately, I've been getting a lot of questions about this. You know, a lot of people, and I know within the transhumanist movement, like, a lot of people are worried that have seen this, that is this painting transhumanism in an ill light? Is it dangerous for progress? And I just don't think progress works like that, to be honest with you. You know, I think that, you know, the job of a storyteller is to tell a compelling story. I mean, you know, if the story was about a bunch of people going to the beach and there was no big great white shark, it's just not an interesting movie, you know? And that's essentially sort of where
right.
we're coming from. However, on the flip side, I do genuinely believe that this technology comes with certain dangers, right? Like, I do believe that. I don't believe that this technology should not be pursued. I strongly believe in this. I mean, chances are I'd be an early adopter on something like this, you know? So I also think that we have a responsibility as storytellers to talk about these things. And I think that, you know, transhumanists, I believe, also have a responsibility to talk about some of these things, because these technologies, regardless, they are coming. They are absolutely coming. And progress has shown, history has shown, that progress has come with bumps, you know? I mean, the Industrial Revolution came with horrible bumps, you know? I mean, there was a lot of problems that happened during that period of time. We got through it, you know? Going all the way back to the 14th century, I mean, you know, we have the bubonic plague wiping out half of Europe, you know, and in large part, you could say, you know, directly related to, you know, the density of cities. We still live in dense cities. We got past it, you know, and we figured out how to make it better. This is just a story that we've come up with that lives on a very long trajectory of what we imagine to be the human story. It's just the point in that history that we think is the most compelling to watch for the sort of Jaws example that I made.
I think the Jaws analogy is great. Because truly, a two-hour movie about everybody showing up at the beach and everything's great is just not that interesting. I mean, you know, maybe you do a romantic comedy or something, but you're not going to have you're not going to have the same movie, are you? I think that makes a lot of sense. And I remember when we talked on the panel at Comic-Con that question actually came up. If the H+ implant was available today. And you could jack in mentally. Would you take it? Right. That was the question. I'm gonna open that up to you guys now. We'll start with Stuart. What do you think? Would you actually be an early adopter? Would you be a user of this technology if it existed?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's we're not practicing at all what we preach, and I think probably all of us would say yes to that question. You know, I think what was so interesting about this story to me and to all of us is that we were fascinated by the speed at which this stuff is evolving, and we're the kind of people who geek out on, you know, everything that's now possible as much as anybody. So it was just a fun sandbox to play in because it was so familiar to us. You know, the what if something went wrong scenario was just a sort of a fun way to kind of slice what's really happening in the world. But, you know, it's not just sort of a doomsday technology story. It's also, you know, kind of operates in the sort of metaphorical world of, you know, how Facebook and iPhones and all this technology has sort of simultaneously brought people closer together and sort of made the world shrink, but also has the effect of isolating people from one another. You know, you spend all your time in line at Starbucks, like updating your Facebook, never noticing the person that's standing in line in front of you. So we just like that paradox. And I think that, you know, we're entering a time that has so many big question marks hanging over it. It's just a cool thing to be able to kind of explore them and, you know, see what the different sides of the arguments are.
Yeah. You know, in pictures that I've seen this email forward going around that shows how people are not disconnected with the people around them, and it's pictures of people like at dinner tables and everyone's on their cell phones,
right.
And pictures of people, you know, like waiting in line and everybody's on their cell phones. These things of you're with people, but you choose to be more engaged in your world online. And I think of, well, if H+ was around and everybody was staring straight ahead at the people right in front of them, but they were watching something else. It's kind of a whole different way to look at the world too, because you still wouldn't even know what people are reacting to, what people are truly engaging with, because you've taken the advice and you put it even inwards. People are able to kind of hide what they're doing in a small way. And, you know, it opens up such fascinating quandaries of the digital age in which we live in that, you know, in Star Trek's world, you know, the communicator was thought of as such far away science fiction. And we look at cell phones today, and we look at the ability for Google to mass create Google goggles and try and bring that technology that's already, you know, when we started this was unimaginable. And now we've already gotten to the place where it's just outside our heads. What about when it actually goes into them?
I mean, I love this idea that, like, you know, getting back to the whole the iPhone analogy, you know, Stuart, you created this, like, vernacular, this visual vernacular in the series of people using their interface, the sweeping and swiping vernacular. And back when we first conceived of this idea, that sweeping and swiping vernacular, which has become a big part of the world of tech, right? Everybody's like swiping their finger here. At that point, it was total science fiction. We'd seen it in movies like Minority Report, right? So like at that time, I think this technology that we have here in the series, I think would have felt much more sci-fi, right? But now we do that on our phones all the time and on our iPads all the time, and it's become much more relatable. So just even in the 5 years, 6 years that we've been working on this project, it, like, so many things have advanced, almost so much so that there were times during the development of the process where Cosmo and I really legitimately got, like, worried, like, oh, man, is this going to be passe by the time we get
it? It'll already be on the shelf by the time you make this.
Yeah, because this technology is going way too fast, yeah.
That's amazing. Well, and the truth is, we're at a point now where, yes, there are interfaces, but it's really not all that far from your brain anyhow, you know? And I think the picture of people sitting around the table and they're all looking at their smartphones actually sums that up pretty well. Hey, Stephen, what about you? Would you take the H+ implant?
Well, I think our guests would probably get a kick out of the fact that my family has talked about nothing else but this question since we watched it on Sunday afternoon. Okay.
Okay. All right.
And it came down to this in the discussion between my wife and my 15-year-old son. She's saying, I love the toys from about 7 years, you know, the 7 years prior time. Want that stuff badly, but I'm never putting it in my head, you know. And Timothy's comeback to that was, well, you'd be like, you know, you'd be like the one poor guy without a cell phone, you know, if you're the You know, you got it. You know, if everybody else has got it, you got to have it in order to function in that world.
Exactly.
I think when we get to that point, we're all going to jump in. I think that's just kind of and though you said just now, Bill, that it's, you know, having it in our hand is not far from having it in our head. I think that when we have it in our head, we're going to find ways of doing things that are so far beyond the cell phone and the iPads. That it will be an order of magnitude, I don't know, more intimate, more intense, so the things that we're able to do.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me because to me the answer is absolutely. If it was available tomorrow, I would go get it. And I'm the guy who, when the first friend of mine who got a phone that took a picture of me with it, I told her, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. Why in the world would you need a camera with a phone, right? That's just silly. And of course, now I have an iPhone, and I do everything with it. I mean, it's, you know, it is completely integrated into my life in a way that I wouldn't even have been able to imagine a few years ago. And I think that's what's interesting about what you guys are showing with this series is that you're in a very real way. When we see people interacting with this technology, we're actually seeing what's happening now. I won't say too much, but there's one scene where someone is they say, I'm sorry, I got to take a conference call, and it's this very creepy kind of, oh wow, you know, that person is now gone, right? It is no longer here because they're in this world in their head, and that's kind of creepy, and you feel that's almost a little bit familiar. But there's another scene where it's an interaction between a married couple, and the guy is paying attention to the wrong thing at the wrong time. And anyone who has looked at their smartphone at the wrong time knows exactly the dynamic of that already. I mean, that dynamic already exists. So I guess the question is, how much of this is just a reflection of where we currently are? John, anyone?
I mean, I think it's total reflection.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say I think there's another scene that, you know, I just think of business applications. There's another scene that's a little earlier that while they're in a meeting, she quickly swipes and answers a question for her because she's researching her while she's
right.
with somebody.
Right.
And that's like, you know, before you go in a meeting with someone, you look them up really quickly and figure out everything that you might be able to talk about, they might need. This is a world where you're looking at someone and you have all the facts and figures right in front of you as well. So it's like it ups that potential of what is possible in terms of communication and knowledge. And it's all there. We're doing it already, you know, with contacts and with keeping information. But the possibilities become endless when all that information is so accessible that you can have it simultaneously to what you might be needing it for.
That's so true. When you see that happen, it's being piped right into our head. You go, ooh, that's kind of creepy. But the reality is we're doing that creepy stuff all the time these days, right? I mean, we're not piping it directly into our heads.
Phil, I mean, I'll never forget, you know, last year when right before Comic-Con, and we had a big phone conference to talk about, you know, sort of, you know, the panel and what we were going to talk about and whatnot. And I'll never forget what you said. You know, you know when we asked you, you know, what you felt about this technology and you know whether you imagined how, you know, like how far fetched you felt it was or realistic. And I remember you said, you know, it something to the effect of, I'm paraphrasing here, but you said, you know, if you're asking me how realistic a world in which we are connected to the internet 24 hours a day, and you know, like, and we have a computer on us all the time, that's the world we live in today.
Right.
The only difference is, rather than that thing being in your pocket, the only leap that you're asking here is saying that it's not in your pocket anymore, it's inside your body, you know.
Well, I totally agree with me. I gotta say,
So I mean that's so. I mean, I guess that I've always really resonated with me. And to answer that question, I think that yeah, absolutely. We've always felt that it was a reflection of, you know where we are today. But I think that, you know, I think that the future always is a bit of a reflection of where we are today. You can always, I mean, I think that, like, the best futurists look at now in order to imagine what we're going to have in the future, right?
Yeah, I think it's true. You can really shock people by talking to them about things that currently exist. You can even surprise them by talking about things that they deal with all the time, because they just haven't thought about them in those terms yet. I have a talk I give from time to time, and one of the things I'm throwing out these scenarios, and one of the scenarios I throw out is that, you know, imagine a world where you call a business and a robot answers, and you're dealing with a robot rather than a human being. And, you know, it sounds like this crazy science fiction thing, but most of the time that's exactly what happens when you call a business anymore. It's, you know, it's not a strange science fiction scenario. It's what you do most of the time. I mean, the word robot isn't the word people expect to hear, but that's actually what they're doing, dealing with in this, like, everyday situation. And I think what's great is you guys are, you know, you're taking this reality and you're giving it a little bit of a push, a little bit of a glance over the horizon, but really very much showing us where we are now.
Have you guys? I know that your first goal here is obviously to, you know, create something that's entertaining and engaging. Have y'all considered the possibility that, I mean, you're actually doing potentially a public service by, you know, talking about some of these things early that could potentially be dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all love the idea that, you know, that John sort of paraphrased it earlier, that, you know, with these gigantic leaps in technology do come some dangers. And, you know, it's not just sort of engaging storytelling, but it's also, I think, an important thing that society sort of looks around the corner before they do something drastic and tries to see what could go wrong with it.
I mean, I think one of the great comparisons that we've, you know, are already unfortunately experienced tragedy with is nuclear energy. You know, it's something that can, you know, power entire cities, but it also, when the reactors go bad, can poison entire water systems, like in Japan. So there's, you know, as long as there are precautions taken and the understanding of the risks involved, you know, I think the first cell phones, the briefcase cell phones, you know, not everyone had them because they were expensive, but also because no one, you know, it wasn't common. It wasn't something that you necessarily had or used every day. And, you
know,
there's always the...
It wasn't practical at that time, you know what I mean?
And once they get into everyone's hands, it's like you hear about radiation dangers, but you see all the research and everything else, and you're like, oh, no, those are safe. You know, it's as it slowly gets into society, pacemakers, when they were initially put into people to keep hearts moving, the idea of a machine that regulates your heartbeat, you know, these things, all of them come from science fiction, and all, you know, I don't wish to say great science fiction, but all science fiction, you know, aspires to be what the future holds. What are these things that we're going to want and we're going to want to do? And H plus is only an extension of that insofar as it's a dream. You know, it's what will be this next step and what would it look like? And I hope that everyone agrees that we've, you know, given a great world.
I'm glad that you mentioned that about nuclear energy, because you just reminded me that when Cosmo and I were first pitching the project, when you pitch projects in Hollywood, sometimes you put together a little presentation package, you know, you get some pictures and this, that, and the other. And one of the things in our pitch package was the letter that Einstein wrote to FDR, I believe it was, on the dangers of the Nazis getting a nuclear bomb, and effectively the dangers of nuclear energy. So yeah, I think that there is a bit of cautionary tale in this, but I don't think that it's to the point where what we're saying that the technology itself is dangerous. What we're saying is that there are dangers that come with this technology, and I think that, you know, it's a mix. Like I said, it's a mix between wanting to tell a really, you know, a sort of edge of your seat story, a mystery and whatnot, but also there is a bit of, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about these things, because when they do come, I think that we probably want to, we all want to be imagining these things and you know, figuring out ways, if nothing else, to make sure that they don't happen. Right?
This is really important that you consider that you consider all the possibilities, that the potential bad outcomes, and that to the extent that it's possible, unintended consequences and unforeseen consequences are something that have been considered as you go into any new venture, as you adopt any technology. So, you know, swinging it back to one of the questions I asked earlier, I talked about whether this reflects a pessimistic view of the future. One of the things we should note is that within the transhumanist community, within folks who are interested in the singularity or nanotechnology, there are much, much bleaker, much, much more horrible scenarios,
right,
than what's laid out in H plus. This is, I would say, where would you put this, Stephen, on the scale? About halfway up the scale? Maybe not even that. Maybe about a quarter of the way up.
Yeah. In this particular scenario, what I think y'all said earlier, about a third of the world dies. there are bleaker scenarios than that. So,
yeah, you know, I
yeah,
mean, that's pretty good.
Two-thirds
survive. That's, you know, we've seen lots worse. We've engaged lots worse possibilities than that.
Right here on this program. As a storyteller, then you have a problem there too, right? Like, if everybody dies, then
yeah, not much story there.
And you have a silent film.
It's the opposite of the beach problem. Yeah, it's not a lot going on. Hey, John, before I forget, I wanted to let you know that we got some feedback in the chat room. There were some Gilmore Girls fans, at least one person who said he was a fan of the Gilmore Girls, but not the show. So I don't know what to do with that. And
right,
and one other I got to point out, who said that they were too busy playing Halo ever to watch. So.
Well, I'm at the Halo post office right now, so hopefully deliver something exciting for that person.
Everyone chimed in on that issue. Well, quickly, before we have to wrap it up, the time is just flying by here, guys. Let's talk a little bit about the future of the show. It's going to start next week on YouTube. Will it run for a season? How much of it will we see? Will the story be done then? Will we see more after that? Speak to me about the future of H plus the digital series.
Well, I definitely hope there's
much
more after this season. I'll just throw it out there now that I think there's far more stories that we all want to tell and know. And, you know, as far as rollout, I would advise everyone to subscribe. I think they'll be pleasantly surprised that first week. But, you know, John, I gotta give you the floor.
Yeah, I mean, the story was written. I mean, like I said, you know, earlier we sort of built this as a big story world, and then we started figuring out what this story was that we wanted to tell. But the world itself and a lot of events and characters even, those sort of still exist in our story world, even if they don't actually exist in this first season, or they're not shown in this first season, or whatever you want to call it, season, I guess is just a word that we're using. I mean, it I guess it's as good a word as any, but...
Batch, right? Yeah, what are you going to call it?
Yeah, the first part of this first chapter of this, and I say first because I do think that, you know, that we leave a lot of stuff. We answer things, but we leave a lot left up in the air and a lot left for questions. And the hope is left for more of the story to be told. We have more story to tell. I think that it comes down to whether or not audiences want it. Really, if they clearly love the show and want to know more and want to explore the world more, we're ready to give it to them.
All right. Well, I can tell you that we are very eager to see it. Looking forward to finding out more than we saw in those first 12 episodes. And I encourage everyone who's listening to follow the link on Fast Forward Radio to the YouTube page. Subscribe to that page. Let's all get behind H Plus, the digital series. We're really looking forward to it, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being with us.
And again, I can't stress. Subscribe to the channel because subscribers will be getting more. They will be getting more, and they will be getting faster stuff. And you know, there will be advantages to that. So if you don't have a YouTube account, sign up for a YouTube account just so you can subscribe.
If you know what, if you've been listening to Fast Forward Radio all this time,
you
don't even have a YouTube account. What's going on there? So yeah, get your YouTube account and get subscribed to this thing, guys. I can't tell you how much I appreciate having you on the show. It's great talking with you all again, and we look forward to, I hope, having you back on down the road to see how the story develops.
Awesome.
Can't
Thanks
wait.
For having us.
Thank you.
All right. Steven, what do we got going on music-wise this evening?
Well, I try to match the music with the storyline, and I hope I did a good job tonight. The song is Transmission by Micah the Girl.
Transmission by Micah the Girl. Well, thanks for putting that together, Stephen. Always a pleasure. Thanks to everyone in the chat room and everyone listening live. Great discussion going on this evening. Thanks once again to our guests and everyone who participated. Great having you all part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back again with a new live show next week. 2 weeks from tonight, Julio Prisco joins us from the Institute for Emerging Ethics and the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies to talk about his new magazine, Touring Church, exploring the nexus of spirituality and the transhumanist movement. It should be compelling stuff. Look forward to being with you all next week, and until then, live to see it.
The heart. everybody.